Hi, and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Bremen.
And I'm Lara Chambaker.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast from the Jackie Winter Group, all about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. The Jackie Winter Group is a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. This podcast is all about offering a glimpse into the work we do as a bridge between clients and creatives. This week, we take a look at creative projects beyond the screen. We look at the processes involved in producing large-scale physical projects like murals and installations and all the other things that we kind of do here between illustration, animation, everything else. But first, how are we all going? Bianca, this is your last day in the office.
I know, in our Melbourne headquarters. So it's been a very full 3 weeks in Melbourne. It's been so nice, and it's been nice to work with the team. But yeah, I am looking forward to getting back to New York, but I'm very sad to be leaving you guys.
Bianca, I have really good news for you. You're not coming back here. You're staying there, and I'm staying here.
So we're still all strewn across the world. So Jeremy and I were in the studio together, but Lara, you're in Brooklyn.
I sure am. It's good. It's stinking hot, but it's good.
Nothing like that hot New York trash smell.
You know what? I'm even learning to love that, Jeremy.
It fades. Speaking of hot trash, this might be a good time to get into some of our links in our Slack professional development channel. And it's been a pretty great week for links, some fantastic stuff. And one of them that I wanted to point out is this book that started on Kickstarter. It's a book called How to Design for Print, Work with Printers, and Control Cost. And I have a pretty failed Kickstarter record in terms of the things that I've backed. Last night, I actually backed on two things. One of them was this book. But yes, the running joke at the office is the Woolup travel pillow, that I backed.
I wanted to borrow it for New York.
I think I'll leave that one there.
We'll but add the a picture of the Woolup to the show notes because it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Excellent. The reason that this book, I think, is fantastic is because, yeah, I think no matter what you do, if whether you're a producer, illustrator, photographer, graphic designer, whatever, knowing how to design for print, I think is such an important skill that it's
a dying skill. I mean, a lot of us, like I studied multimedia design, so I learned it on the job. So I think that this book would be an incredible resource to add to our library here.
Yeah, I can't wait to read this. I mean, like, it's pretty pointless spending time and money creating beautiful artwork if the finished product doesn't actually, like, come out as intended. And I don't know if you watched the actual video, but I guess they're saying that the whole goal of this book is to really sort of quickly give people the understanding that they need, you know, in order to ensure that they're making the right decisions during the design process that will sort of guarantee a great print result. Like, I'd love to be able to refer to this when I'm unsure, but also to, like, point clients and artists to this information. And she seems, the woman, I'm blanking on her name, but she seems like just the right person to do it. It's good Kickstarter.
Absolutely. And something we've spoken about a lot with, if you're a producer, account manager, whatever, is about having kind of a broad skill set. And like being a good producer means knowing how to work with your talent to produce work. So yeah.
Especially if you're a print producer.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, the reason this is close to my heart as well is because, I mean, I started out in print, and Is Not Magazine, the self-initiated project that started Jackie Winter, kind of came off the back of starting a magazine that came out of my experience and knowledge of working for print and being able to use the medium of offset lithography in a creative way to do something for little money. So the more you know about the actual kind of means of production, the more, I guess, the more creative that you can actually get. So,
and I suppose we should say that the goal amount has been met. So the book is going to go into production, but you can still, like, order it via the link for, like, I guess, cheaper than
it will
be in
store. You have to pre-order it now, actually. I don't think you can Kickstart it anymore, but it's go to the Kickstarter to see actually more about the book, and then you can pre-order from there. Speaking about kickstarting and other kind of alternative funding methods, once again, Making the Rounds is Fast Company, been on fire this last week. It's about the crowdfunding site Patreon, and I think they just racked up a pretty major funding round of like $100 million or something. But we haven't spoken about Patreon before, and I do want to speak more about it in a future episode. But this, again, harks back to one of my favorite pieces of design writing, which is it's not even design writing, just business writing, maybe, from Kevin Kelly, from one of the founders of Wired and Cool Tools, who talks about 100 True Fans, how any kind of artist can can really make a living if they have kind of 100 true fans. And I love this idea, kind of can translate so easy to a site like Patreon, where basically it gives artists and creatives a direct access to their most kind of fervent and engage followers, so they can kind of make their living.
Yeah, I guess so. Like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and things like that sort of focus on specific projects. Patreon sort of asks fans to give money on a subscription basis. So, the idea is it'll allow sort of everyone from cartoonists to podcasters to, I don't know, whatever, artisanal furniture makers to turn like individual pledges into like a meaningful ongoing income.
Yeah, so this article is just a really brief overview. If you haven't heard of Patreon, just want to know a bit more about it. It's all about how it's helping artists build media empires, essentially what it is.
This is weird. Like, Patreon feels to me kind of like Oxfam, but for like creatives. Like you're like sponsoring a creative child.
Well, I wonder if this kind of model poses maybe the same challenges as, you know, for content creators as for content that's maybe funded by advertisers. Like once does the creator run the risk of losing the creative control and shifting this control into the hands of the backers and the people that are financially invested in the work, or do they remain that?
Yeah, because they just brought out like analytics tools that let you see like, you know, what content the highest paying subscribers like respond to most, blah, blah, blah. And so like, yeah, if you start creating content that is purely catering to that, then it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? I just get what you mean. Do we know anyone who's running like a successful Patreon page, like personally, do we know?
I think there's a few people. I think Martin Abel, one of our artists who's kind of more involved in the kind of fantasy and pinup scene, is pretty popular there. And Paul Robertson, who we don't personally represent, but we did a show at Lamington Drive with, is also quite popular there. But yeah, look, it's I think
we should start one for the podcast.
I think we're doing okay.
Well, they talk about the article, the Chapo Trap House, that has like 15,978 patrons, and it brings them in $71,154 a month. Imagine what we could do with that. We could at least have a mic for each person.
How many bagels we could buy?
We could have a third microphone. okay, and moving on, the last piece. I mean, when I saw this, I couldn't not put it in. This was so Maya the Bee, an animated show on Netflix, an artist on that show, I just happened to sneak in a bit of a phallus in the background drawing in one of the episodes, and it caused a bit of a stir. It's come up with some of our artists before, not something that's actually kind of happened, but, you know, people trying to kind of be a bit more subversive with
I mean, what work. Creative hasn't joked about hiding a dick drawing in a commercial work before? But to actually do it is like so stupid and so funny.
Ugh. Takes balls. we did talk about the hairy arm technique in terms of, you know, trying to get a client to notice something. And
yeah, but a hairy arm and a giant dick are different things.
Well, yes. Netflix did release a public statement saying that it was a very bad joke, quote unquote, from one artist. But yeah, I just thought that was too funny not to put in. We will put the links to all of these in our show notes, which you can visit at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Also subscribe to our tiny letter every week at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter to get these links and to be the first to know when the episode drops. Getting into our main topic for this week, we wanted to really kind of go beyond the screen and talk about other kind of large scale and physical projects that we do. So often in the advertising and design world, we are kind of designing for screen and designing for print. But a much bigger part that we don't often talk about is, you know, larger scale activations such as murals, installations, and other, you know, kind of built environment pieces. So it's a pretty big topic. And to help get us started, we are bringing in a very special guest from the agency itself. We have Lee Johnson, who is one of our senior producers here at Jackie Winter, who also has a pretty distinguished and long history working in kind of murals and other kind of outdoor work, from her volunteer work at Pow Wow Hawaii to producing some of our finest installations here at the agency. Hello, Lee. How are you?
Good. How are you, Jeremy?
Good. We wanted to talk with you specifically about murals. So in terms of, I guess, the more kind of commercial application that you see kind of out there, how are we being commissioned for this kind of work? And what have you experienced?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different areas that murals are requested for, mainly for environmental spaces, including things such as office walls, retail environmental areas, sometimes window displays, and rarely exterior walls as well. Most are to spruce up a space with a focal piece. Some are for a live activation for a particular campaign to bring excitement to a brand, because it can be quite interactive. People love to stop and watch a mural come to life. And it's even great if you want to take a time lapse of the piece. It's quite popular to do. But love a good mural.
And what's your kind of background? It's something that you've always kind of been interested personally in for a while.
Yeah, it's been a real love of mine. So I went over to Powwow just for.
Oh, I'm Powwow going this Hawaii. Year.
Yes, it's so exciting.
What is it actually?
So Powwow is a mural festival, basically. But it's really a festival to bring together a bunch of different artists and creatives. And it's really expanded. They've just launched one in Guam. There's one in Japan. I think they had one in Jordan this year. Jasper, who founded Powwow, actually founded it in Hong Kong, which is where I lived for a year. And I reached out to him just for a little advice while I was living over there. And he invited me over to Hawaii, and it was a really great experience. And without that, I would not be here today. So thank you, Jasper.
We're definitely seeing a huge uptick in working with a different type of client base, from architects and interior designers, and a lot of design studios who are doing kind of more placemaking work have kind of, I guess, translate the skill sets of especially kind of illustrators who, were typically working annual reports, now working, on larger kind of actual built environments. So as from a production perspective, what are some of the challenges that we face that kind of differ from when you're working on a typical project on screen and to working for a project that's going to be out in the world?
Yeah, I mean, it is quite a different medium. So, regularly we work on commercial pieces that are done digitally. So the workflow is quite different. Everything's kind of done maybe on paper and then onto screen. But this has a lot of different physical aspects to it that you need to keep in mind. So, there's a few different things that you need to consider before you go through a full project. The size and location of the space are going to really dictate a lot of it. So what kind of paint do you need? How many hours are you going to need to install it? The kind of tools that you need. So if it's a really large space, you're going to need a boom lift, a ladder. Are you going to be able to project onto the wall? And the location of whether it's in external or internal is going to dictate if you need council permits or a whole other set of requirements there. And also just paperwork as well. Do you need public liability insurance if it's a large space? Do you need a safe work method statement? And even sometimes a yellow card if a boom lift is required.
What's a yellow card?
Oh, that's like a special thing that you need. It's basically kind of a license.
So is that an Australian thing, or is that...
Yeah, I think, I can't remember the exact height, but I think if it's over 10 or 20 metres, something around there, then you need a yellow...
Yeah, I mean, look, it just sounds like it's such a different set of skills that you need, and it's kind of like, I think people who are live action or photography producers, it might be something that kind of... that fits in their wheelhouse a bit more than it would do it for a traditional kind of digital or print producer. But digital print producers are the ones who typically commission these types of artists. So that's why I think it does require a different set of skills in that regard. I mean, have you seen any, what kind of skills do you think kind of need to cross over for if someone wants to produce that kind of work?
Yeah, I mean, really the kind of skills that you would need do cross over quite a bit. So time management, you really got to make sure that everyone's sticking to a schedule, that expectations are also managed along the way. So similar to a digital illustration, you would ask people to, do a rough sketch, show them what's going to happen, maybe tighten up the sketch, and then have the client involved along the way as it's being painted so that they're happy with the piece. Because something that's different about mural work is that there's longevity that's usually required. So it's gonna be on the wall for a while. And also with that as well, you do need to manage expectations as to the care of the piece as well. If there's any leftover paint, it's always great to leave with the client so they can touch things up. And we've even had a few murals along the way that's been on tiles. So
making sure that it isn't in the way of customers, so that they're going to rub on it and you know, have the paint come off, is really important, so that it can last a long time. But yeah, it's all about managing expectations, and yeah, explaining the process to clients, really.
Yeah. Look, I mean, and you know, you're talking about kind of painted murals there, but like we've done murals that are not painted. I mean, vinyl is another way to apply that kind of work. And yeah, this is where you almost need some kind of architectural knowledge as well. I mean, you briefly touched upon things like surfaces. And I think, yeah, that's such a big part of things in terms of sometimes people think because they have a surface there, you can just kind of paint on it. But yeah, there will be sometimes a disconnect between what someone kind of designs on screen in terms of then how it will actually kind of look. So being able to educate and step a client through all the kind of potential risks that are kind of inherent with any kind of built environment project is really kind of important. Speaking about risks, like what kind of things do you think that, you know, you need to make clients aware of when they're commissioning this type of work?
I guess disruption to a space is something that they need to keep in mind. But also just managing expectations as to maybe how long a piece might need to be installed. An example of that is we did a project for the Frost Building in Sydney, where Gemma O'Brien designed the piece, but the surface was a really rough brick texture, which is quite difficult to install. So Will Lyons and his team went in there and installed it. But that piece itself, it does take a little bit longer to do as opposed to a flat surface, because there is just so many textures to it. So being able to explain the complexity of a project to a client is really important.
Yeah, being able to get the people who, like the technical people involved in the discussion as well. Like, for example, we did a mural on our building and we used this really interesting kind of aluminum brick wrap that conformed to the shape. So instead, but it looks like it is kind of painted as well. But yeah, I think, you know, people have to think about, well, why do they want kind of something there? So getting Will on board, for example, you know, like you were touching on before, like the experience of somebody painting something or being able to use that for social media or to have that kind of craft there sometimes is more important than the actual kind of end finish as well.
Yeah. And also having an understanding of what does the client want out of this? Is this just a, you know, a 1 month, 2 month piece, or is it something that needs to last for a really long time? Because, you know, maybe you don't need it to be super robust and made out of aluminium foil. but, yeah, you could just use, you know, different materials to make it look good for a month.
Yeah, look, there's so many different things to kind of to cover in here. I mean, we could probably do a whole episode just on murals. I mean, the things that you just even kind of briefly touched on, such as insurances and equipment, you know, how you even get the work kind of on there. It's like sometimes I've seen a case where we've designed something amazing and then we can't actually project it because there's nowhere to kind of put a projector It has to be done kind of overnight, or you have to have a very specific type of insurance. Obviously there's regional aspects to consider as well that can be different.
Absolutely.
In different countries or even kind of different states. So yeah, as a producer and even as an artist, like, you know, as an artist, being able to design properly, knowing kind of like that you might have to paint it or someone else has to paint it. Like if you're doing something like very, very intricate, that sometimes a client will put a reference and of a very intricate piece of artwork and then say, okay, I want this painted, realizing it could take months to kind of do that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like you might look at a wall going, oh, that looks easy. That'll take me a couple of hours. And then it ends up being a few days of work. So of course that does come with experience, and the more that you do it, it might be easier. But yeah, that's just something that we've learned along the way.
Absolutely. And when it's kind of done right, the results kind of are really stunning. You know, murals are just kind of one way to activate a space. Another thing that we're seeing a lot more with a lot of our more craft-based artists are doing kind of installations as well. So we work with a lot of, you know, whether it's embroiderers or paper craft artists or, you know, even we did something with Kate Benazzi, who is a silkscreen printer who ended up doing all the lighting for a new kind of mall development because of her work with color. So using artists to activate spaces in more immersive ways is becoming more and more of a popular thing. Laura, you just wrapped up a massive installation
sure
up in Toowoomba.
Did.
And it was an amazing, amazing end result with one of our artists, Ben Jaharney, but also a big kind of learning curve as well on a lot of areas. So I thought you'd be a good person to kind of talk about these installations a bit more specifically. Can you give us a bit more of your kind of background here?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I guess in terms of the sorts of installations that we're doing, there's of course the shopping centre stuff. Shopping centres love a good installation. Window displays, event showpieces, as Lee said, whether it's just a, you know, a sort of focal point for the night, or again, sort of some sort of live installation so that it's almost more performance art of some sort. And then also sort of installations that are crafted for shoots. So they might be used in a TVC or print commercial or any other sort of manner of campaign material. And that's the stuff that I guess the build is different for, you know, each of those things, because, for example, something that's going in a shopping centre or window display has to have that longevity that Lee spoke about. Something that's being used for a shoot only has to hold together for the shoot. So it's quite a different process, but there's still some, you know, similarities across them.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things of this is, yeah, they're really to drive people to a space. I guess with murals, sometimes, you know, they're more about kind of keeping someone engaged with the space. But when you're doing kind of installations, it's more about, I guess, yeah, creating this type of attraction in a way.
Yeah, totally.
And so, Laura, what have you found to be the biggest challenges in terms of someone who has really kind of started their career mostly kind of producing digital and print work into moving into the space? Like, where did you find some of the differences?
I mean, look, logistically, it's just a whole different ball game, really. So, you know, large scale installations have been, as you've said, a real learning curve for me, but, one that I've loved. There's just, and I'm going to touch a bit on things that Lee has said already, because there's absolutely crossover, but there are just a whole lot of things you have to think about when a project is taken off screen and into a physical space. There's this sort of endless stream of things that can affect the project so hugely, and it's just a lot to keep track of. So, you know, for example, with a mural or installation, it's not just about creating the artwork. You have to think so much about the space that it's going into. So, yeah, things like permits, how you're going to transport it there, how you're going to store it. You know, what times are you allowed on site for install? Do you need a professional rigging team? Do you need safety clearances, insurances? What's the lighting like? Is that structure going to be stable enough to last the whole time that it needs to be there? Will, a client on this job told me recently they had another installation they were doing, and they finished it. It was great. And then they went away, and some annoying youths came and actually deconstructed the installation. Yeah, so now they have a policy of making sure everything's like secretly like bolted and hinged down, and, you know, like, so that people can't sort of pull it apart. And it's you know,
damn youths.
Exactly, the damn youths. But it's a litany of potential issues, and you know, any one of them can mean total catastrophe for the project if they go unchecked. Now, I mean, of course, on the simpler end, you have your sort of standard mural, and there, you know, of course, there are key things like thinking about, as Lee said, the surface it's being applied to, you know, the amount of time you have to apply it, access to power if you need a projector, you know, but those things tend to apply across every mural project. So once you've done a few, it becomes a lot less complex. You know, you just sort of maintain a checklist and make sure you go through it. But then on the other end, you've got sort of enormous custom one-off installations, and by their very nature, the design and build and install processes are going to be somewhat different for each and every project. And so it's tricky because issues can come up that you never even thought to check. Like, maybe you're gluing two materials together that you haven't before, and it turns out the glue isn't strong enough to hold them there for more than 2 weeks, but you don't know that until the third week that it's up and it starts falling apart. And, you know, I think it's here that the role of the producer becomes even more vital, you know, making sure that whoever is responsible for each of the elements of production is being thorough and doing their job and asking these questions and doing that the whole way through. I mean, sometimes it doesn't even matter with these things. If you've been producing installations since you were knee-high to a grasshopper, there are still going to be new challenges. And I think that's part of the beauty of it, and it's part of what I'm enjoying so much, you know, absolutely. But it's also, it also makes it really challenging, and it means you've got to be really on the ball, really thorough in your testing and questioning of everything, and have backup plans as well.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think they're actually, like you were saying before, like sometimes you can have a template for, you know, doing murals. Like, I found in our experience, that's not always the case. Like, I know this was a funny one. We did this big car park in Bondi Beach with actually Will Lines and our artist Clemens Habeck. And one thing we didn't kind of notice was like that there were these kind of columns like in the middle of it that like had to kind of, that were in front of one of the walls. And now we're dealing with now a completely three-dimensional structure that we had to kind of work in with a flat one. And kind of, how do you do that? Especially when you're, this was kind of a development, and you're kind of considered not just an artist anymore, but like, you're part of like the building crew in this way. And so you have to work with other people in a completely different way.
absolutely. Because I think one of those things on the checklist is do a site visit, you know? So in that case, you're doing a site visit. So that kind of thing applies to every mural project. You should be doing a site visit or at least having photos and stuff, you know? Like, so that sort of thing can apply across every mural job that you do.
Yeah, I think, you know, a really good metaphor here is kind of the differences between photography production and live action, where it's like, you know, photography and live action are very kind of similar in a way, but live action production just kind of almost takes everything in photography and just kind of ramps it up to another level. And I think when you're talking about a mural being kind of flat on a surface, or sometimes, you know, curving around a surface, conforming to a surface, where an installation is now like in a space and can do so many more different things, the amount of regulation, the amount of other kind of trades that are kind of involved is so much more complex.
One of the most interesting installations that I've seen here in Australia over, like, gosh, the past like couple of years, friends of Jackie Winter, Tin and Ed, created a jumping castle in the middle of a shopping center, and I cannot imagine what went into the production of that.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's kind of, yeah, they are kind of like making kind of, you know, small films as well, because, you know, you are kind of taking over a space, and there's so much, I mean, getting work done kind of in that dimension, and also dealing with children and jumping and safety.
I think, you know, that affects the kind of... At the very least, with something like that, like, jumping castles are a thing that exists, right? So you talk to the jumping castle manufacturers and they'll know a lot of this stuff. Where things start to get like crazy tricky is when you're just making like a random installation that's totally unique, that has never been made before. I went to this talk the other night, Neville Wakefield, who's just like this insane curator and does these crazy site-specific enormous installations. They're like just totally nuts. If you've ever I don't know if you've heard of like Desert X that he just wrapped up, but these in like the Coachella Valley, he does these. Yeah, it's just crazy stuff. It's worth looking into. But he did some stuff for Nike. He was like the creative director for their Flyknit like celebration stuff this year. And they made these like huge, like knitted tubes that you could sort of get into. And I don't even know how to explain it, but I was listening to him talk thinking like, how the hell do you go about figuring out how to make that happen and make it safe and make it look good and like and get it done on time and on a certain budget? Like, I just don't even know where to begin.
This is where I think a good producer is someone who like knows how to work with people kind of on the peripheries of other industries to kind of bring them in. And that's kind of why when you're doing installations, there is a lot of crossover again with film sets, because you're bringing in a lot of those kind of similar skills of people who do lighting and gaffing and set building.
There's crossover as well with like the general production that we do as well, with just like the 2D illustration stuff. I mean, like, the skills I think are essentially the same. There's just, I think there's a lot more knowledge needed. It's like, I mean, it's production on steroids, as you were saying before. Like, you have to be even more organized, even more thorough. And I think it's valid to say that there's a certain level of, what's the right term? I guess like guts or adamance or perhaps authority, like, you know, not being afraid to be like really firm with people to make sure that they are really listening to you and doing things in the way that you need them to. I think, like,
well, because you're asking people to go out of their comfort
zone. Totally. And also you're just generally wrangling a much broader team on these sorts of projects. Like, so that often includes third party suppliers and tradespeople that may not have necessarily the same investment in the project as you do. And it's really vital that you stay on top of them and make sure that things get done. And being the producer and being the authority in that situation is tough. And it's even more important on a project like this than it is on, you know, perhaps some digital illustration projects.
If you had to talk to you know, younger Lara from maybe like a year ago, like if you hadn't done these kind of projects before, like what kind of advice would you give? Like, you know, what are kind of two or three main points of things you need to kind of look out for when you're doing an installation like this?
I think it would be a mix of things. I think like the checklist thing is like having, just going through in your head, like literally sitting down and thinking like, okay, what are all the things that could maybe go wrong? Like talking to people who have done similar things maybe, or talking to the different people that are responsible for different elements of the project and asking them, okay, like, what are the things we need to consider? Making a checklist and making sure you're actually going through that actively with everyone. Having regular pre-production meetings. I guess like site visits as well where possible is just like, communication is obviously valuable, vital in every single project you ever do ever, whether it's creative or not. But again, when you're doing a project where the tiniest mistake or tiniest miscommunication can throw things completely off the rails, it's like even more vital that everyone is clear and across what's happening and that you are clear and across what the process is and you have a plan from the get-go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think in terms of plans as well, another thing I would say is whatever timelines you have made, double them at the beginning.
Yes. And, oh, know. My God. That is a key lesson. Yes. Triple them. Like, seriously, have a buffer, because even if you've planned everything perfectly, when you get on site, inevitably something will go wrong. Just, you know, it doesn't matter if you've done everything you absolutely meant to do. There's going to be like, I don't know, some storeroom that's locked or some person who doesn't show up on time or whatever it might be that throws things off. And if you've got extra time to work with, then that gives you the space to figure out a solution. And that is absolutely invaluable.
So true. I mean, again, going back to this architecture metaphor that I love, you know, when people are building a house and they're building a foundation, like, you know, it's whatever can go wrong will go wrong. If you're kind of digging into ground and you hit rock, you know, that's, I mean, of course you can plan for that. I mean, you could do some kind of crazy kind of soil testing and things before, but there's so many things that just come up and, you know, just when you're on site. So yeah, being able to be kind of resilient, personally and professionally when those things happen, it's a big one. So one of the last things that I wanted to kind of touch on is another thing that's kind of coming up, which is a bit of a, I mean, kind of a hybrid between murals and installations in some way, which is live drawing. Again, clients are really looking to engage with artists and creative talent in so many kind of different ways. And this is kind of one that we're seeing a lot more of, especially with things emerging like the iPad and other, and Apple Pencil and all this amazing software. I might give a plug to our own digital life drawing that we started called Looking Glass here at our gallery, which has been an amazing program that we're doing fortnightly, where people can actually just use iPad Pro and Pencil to do some life drawing. But when we're talking about live drawing in this way, which is kind of getting artists to work, you know, live on site, whether it's kind of more kind of like live fashion illustration or whether it's kind of more kind of painting on objects or other kind of things, or even performing a mural in some ways. This is something that we've been doing more of. And Bea, I'd love to, you know, hear your experience about this.
Yes, live illustration. I guess really talking about performing work live, so as an artist performing live. And, you know, we do that in a number of ways here, and you touched on a few, but one that we haven't really spoken about is I guess more something that happens internally, where, you know, one of our artists, a scriber or a graphic recorder, might actually go into an agency and work in a brainstorming session or a conference environment and actually visually scribe what is happening and kind of like assist with either the brainstorming process or the retention of knowledge that might be happening when you're actually delivering a keynote. So that's one area that we do in live illustration, where I guess it's relatively simple, like as long as the artist is someone that's, you know, kind of easy to work with and can kind of you know, sort of be in the background and just, you know, be involved in the process, but you know, not quite get in the way. And as long as they have the materials that they need and know where they need to go, then that's pretty easy. But you know, we do a lot of work where our artists are being used as on-camera talent. So perhaps they're going actually into a film set or a TV commercial set to either work on camera and execute their craft on camera, or actually execute their craft while being, you know, kind of being the actor or the model or the talent in a process. And so that kind of has its own challenges too. But one that I think crosses, I mean, I guess the biggest area of live illustration and live art that we do, which really crosses over with what Lee and Larry, you've spoken a lot about, is when our artists are going into either perform a piece at like an event. I did one recently in New York with one of our street artists, Brolga, where he painted the side of a truck for the launch of a new car sharing company. At the event, you know, learning about this new service while an artist is there performing their work onto a surface that, you know, a truck isn't a surface that, you know, we hadn't probably worked with before. So that had challenges in terms of working out, you know, the paint that, you know, we needed to apply onto the surface so that it was there for all time.
Yeah, look, that's interesting what you're talking about, kind of working live as well, because I think so much of what clients see where they get these ideas is kind of from, you know, they can be 15 seconds Instagram posts or other edited content where it looks really amazing once you kind of send it to music. We've done this before. We did a conference called Field Trip where we got our artists to kind of perform work on stage. And the preparation that goes into actually making like this look exciting and interesting is quite significant, because sometimes it can be really, really boring, you know? So this is kind of crosses over into a lot of things we've talked about before, especially when you're talking about, you know, the artist as talent, kind of extending a bit more about artists as influencers in a bit of a way, like, okay, what does it mean when your artist is actually a screen talented actor? And that actually has kind of legal implications as well, like if it's going in a TV commercial, if they're TV stuff, you know, has different kind of union guidelines and things.
Yeah,
like that.
And also exclusivity as well, like, often, you know, an artist might be particularly skilled and perfect for the job, but if they've worked as talent for, you know, for a company that's in a competitive market, then the client's probably not going to want to use them. So that's something to keep in mind. And in terms of performing, like, you know, one of the biggest areas that we do that does present quite a few challenges and crosses over into, you know, the artist being an influencer or someone that is engaging with an audience, is live painting and illustration for events and activations. And, you know, we have a number of fashion illustrators that do this at things like the races, where they're being asked to, you know, illustrate beautiful outfits. You know, someone that's attending the races or attending a shopping center event can get their outfit drawn by a fashion illustrator and actually take that home with them. We have our typographers and letterers, the letterettes, also do a lot of this kind of shopping center activation work as well. We're doing a lot of work in shopping centers.
Well, I think, yeah, shopping centers are, you know, they're not in trouble, but like, yeah, they're having to be really reinvented, you know, to compete with online retail. But yeah, a lot of this live work, I think it comes back to some more kind of classical things, like, you know, people busking or, you know, caricature artists kind of in the street and things like that, where, yeah, there is this kind of element of excitement and this idea that you can have this kind of really unique piece. But it does require some very specific production skills in terms of, okay, well, you know, especially for fashion illustrators and, like, you know, caricatures is a very specific skill about doing things really, really fast. And sometimes a lot of artists can't work that fast and kind of on the spot in that way. So we've had to get creative a few times. I know when we did a few pieces
for Meijer,
exactly, which is a local department store here, what we did was the artist actually kind of drew kind of bodies, blank kind of bodies, almost like mannequins. And then they kind of put then the heads and the outfits kind of on top of that. And then that brings up additional kind of challenges as well. It's like, because it looks kind of funny when you just have a headless body there, and so, you know, you kind of need to leave space, but people want their logos on there, and you need to, like, we did an initial run of postcards that didn't have enough room for the heads, you know. So
yeah, and you know, if you are a client that is producing an event and, you know, you want to engage with your audience, you want to make the most of it. And so the quicker that the artist can work and the quicker that the artist can work and create something that's really beautiful or really engaging or really interesting that the guest can take home with them, then the better. And, you know, one of the things to look out for, especially with those kind of live illustration events, is for the client to actually have someone on site that is responsible for perhaps some kind of traffic management and actually sort of coordinating the placement of people that are, you know, the guests that are coming in to either get their portrait drawn or their outfit drawn, or whether it's you know, our artists, letterettes, who are letterers and typographers, do a lot of really beautiful gift card takeaways, you know, very popular around like sort of Mother's Day and Christmas and stuff like that.
And that's something we certainly learnt the hard way, isn't it? You know, like, I guess having that sort of feedback from our artists, like where they were both there sort of doing the artwork, but also found themselves stuck trying to manage the clients and get crowd control. And that's something we sort of learnt that way that gets, you know, added to the checklist.
Yeah, I think this really comes back to one of the core things that Lee mentioned before, which is it's just so simple, managing expectations. And I just kind of think that, yeah, whenever you, bottom line with any of these projects, as soon as you start moving things into a physical environment, there's so many more things that you have to kind of take, you know, that you have to kind of take into account.
Yeah, well, even the live stuff, I mean, I guess when you are asking an artist or a creative to kind of come into your event, and they're basically representing the brand. So, I mean, A, they have to be the right personality. And so we talked a lot about that when we were talking about brand partnerships and kind of influencer engagements. You know, the creative needs to be a good fit for the actual brand because they're representing the brand. So I think, you know, It's really important for perhaps the client to meet with the artist beforehand, and for, you know, the artist is actually performing a very specialized skill on demand, and they're having to engage with people. So there's, you know, they have to be quite comfortable with that, and they're doing that in quite a demanding way, which is, you know, far more challenging than just having to perform their trade, you know, in the comfort of their own studio. You know, you have people engaging with you, and talk with you and learn about you and learn about the brand, you know, while you're actually trying to do your craft. So yeah, it is a bit of a specialized skill, and there's like time pressure, and yeah, I mean, like, you are just representing the brand.
There's even like little things like like, they sound so simple, but like when you're confirming like the time that they need to be there, the client will often tell you the time that the event runs, right? Like, oh yeah, we need them working from, you know, 4 till 6 p.m. but okay, that's when they need to actually be illustrating. What time do they need to be there? Do you need to brief them in? Do they need to prep anything? And so it's like, often, well, no, they're actually going to have to be there from, you know, 2 till 6 or whatever. And so that should obviously be in the fee, and just like little things like that you have to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where, you know, call sheets become important. I mean, they're very much something that are used in the sort of film and television industry, and do cross over into the event space as well. Allowing adequate breaks and allowing that crowd control, and allowing the artist to actually get through as much as they can, so that the guests that are actually coming to engage with the event, it is a success.
Look, if you are a film, TV, or photography producer, there's not going to be much new information here, but I think one of the emerging things that we're seeing is that more and more work needs to be kind of, or wants to be driven into a physical environment. More and more artists want to kind of work in this space. So I think if you are a print or creative producer who, you know, is looking for an artist like this, like, you know, don't be afraid to take a chance on an artist who, you know, hasn't done this kind of work before, because so many new methods for putting work out there are happening at the moment. You know, whether it's kind of VR, AR, the things that we've kind of spoken about before, or even kind of, you know, working with influencers in a different way. This is kind of something that is already kind of emerged as a really big trend, but yet does come with a lot more kind of pitfalls and challenges to learn. So the more you can kind of collaborate and learn from other producers and other types of artists to make this work happen, the better. But yeah, we'll put links to a lot of these projects that we talked about in our show notes and other kind of resources that you might want to check out at our podcast page. But otherwise, I think we'll leave it here. Wrapping up, like we like to do every week, is the most Melbourne and New York thing we've seen this week. I think we're going to add another continent into the mix and go into the most Melbourne, New York, and most Singapore thing that has happened this week. Lee, you were just recently in Singapore. What happened over there? Anything of note?
I was over in Singapore for a cousin's wedding, which was very fun. But the most Singapore thing that happened over there was a pretty short amount of time to be there. But I think one of the things that stood out to me was just how people walk really slow and shuffle everywhere that I go. So I'm a bit of a speed walker, and I found that really frustrating. But that's okay. Sorry, guys.
Bianca, it's your last day in Melbourne.
It is.
And so I'm sure you were paying extra close attention to things that were happening. What's the most Melbourne thing that happened to you this week?
Do you know what? I wasn't. I've just been trying to cram everything in, whether it's work and hanging out with all of the lovely team here at Jackie Winter, or, you know, all of my favorite people, all of going to all of my favorite restaurants and bars. I haven't really noticed anything, but mine is kind of walking related. Melbourne is so small, especially where our office is in Collingwood, that I cannot walk down the street without bumping into, I think my record was 5 people.
Are you showing off about how popular you are?
No, but
my Melbourne thing is that I'm really popular.
Well, just, you know, people
such a New Yorker
you see,
bee.
Like, see at a cafe, like, I don't know, like, I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess it's more maybe Collingwood is such a creative hub that a lot of, you know,
the bubble,
clients,
the Collingwood
and
bubble.
And, yeah, the little Collingwood bubble.
See, I get in Yarraville, I run into dogs that I know from the dog park, but I don't know the people. But I'm like, oh, it's Cooper.
My Melbourne thing has been on one of the 12 Slack groups that I'm part of, made a new channel this week called Great Plate with the number 8 for GR8PL8, which is all just a collection of license plates that people have seen driving. I think yes. It's more of an indictment on how much we're stuck in traffic. Oh. But one of my favorites, and I've seen this a few times, I think it's like a fleet of different plumbers. They're called Plum First. Apart from this license plate, which is Bog1, they also had this amazing tagline, which is, we're number one in the number two business. And every time I see that,
that's so good.
Yeah, it's really bright.
Copywriting genius. Oh my God.
Really. What was your most New York thing?
Again, it's like, it's so hard. Everything that happens is the most New York thing ever. It's like, it's ridiculous. This city is ridiculous. But I was walking, this just happened yesterday and I have a video of it, so I thought this would be a good one. I was walking through Madison Square Park last night to get home, and it was full of people, of course, but everyone was just kind of like shuffling through to get to the subway, and suddenly a like pack of people broke out in what I guess was like some kind of flash mob, but there wasn't actually any music. So like no one really noticed for a bit, and they were just kind of like moving weirdly in everyone's way. I have a video, but it was kind of at the end where everyone had moved out of the way, but I'll still send it to you guys. Breaking news, I have an addition. I've just remembered the most New York thing ever. So our poor production assistant Arta here in New York, lovely, lovely Arta, she didn't get much or any sleep last night because, oh, this is the worst. Okay, so she woke up in the middle of the night feeling something like moving on her leg, and at first she thought it must just like, you know, be the sheet or something, but it kept moving up her leg, so she looked under the sheets only to discover the biggest cockroach the world has ever seen making its way up her thigh. And after that she basically just like couldn't get back to sleep because of the deep emotional scarring, and yeah, now she's like terrified to go into her apartment.
Well, don't let her listen to this, because Alyssa, who we share an office with in New York, did actually tell me that New York is just full of, like, it's just like a city of walls of cockroaches.
That's not all right. That's making me not mind coming back to Melbourne.
On that note, I think we'll wrap up. Thank you very much, Bea.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areed Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jackie Winter. That's a Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz, and you can sign up to our weekly newsletter, getting all of the links that we talk about every week and a link to the current show every Friday at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff at soundcloud.com/jackiewinter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details on our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye-bye. And so she holds a flame, but it's just cellophane blowing in the wind.
Yes. We're recording.